Books of the Bible. The book of Daniel is about one man who submits to God above all else and God's faithfulness to his people in all circumstances. Daniel's prophetic visions teach us that God raises up and tears down kingdoms. All earthly kingdoms will pass away, but God will establish an everlasting kingdom. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's a new year, but there ain't nothing new under the sun. This is Wretched Radio. We still need wretched stuff, and you have it. Would you please send it to idea@wretched.org or feel free to text whatever you want. Please note, Jimmy would love to respond, but the texter machine doesn't work that way. But we will do our best to answer questions, comments, conundrums, snarks here if you send it to 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Andrew. Todd, my brother got his girlfriend pregnant. They have since married and have now shared the news that they are pregnant after the wedding. But being believers themselves, they've confessed they were in sin with the way the baby was conceived. My mother has asked that I chip in a family-wide gift of a 3D sonogram, but I feel this is celebrating only their sin and not actually gifting the only innocent soul in this situation.
No, this is, I'm giddy to tell you this. You're not celebrating sin because the sin has been repented of. What do we do with that sin? The same thing that God does. We put it, it's the deepest part of the ocean, east and west business. They've repented. They've confessed it. That is the best thing that can happen. Wow. I wish there were more of that public repentance in churches. We all see the baby bump. We all know what's going on here and they're not okay. And we don't know what to, bridal shower. Do I give them a gift? Am I happy or am I sad? When public repentance happens for a sin, then it's like, rock on, away we go. Let's have a baby. Let's celebrate. How much do you need for the 3D ultrasound? And give it with joy. You're not celebrating sin. It's been forgiven. This baby shouldn't have a mark on it because parents sinned before being intimate, before getting married. It was a sin. It was forgiven. And now you can celebrate. And long as the subject of ultrasounds and babies are brought up, just a shout out to Preborn Ministry, still doing the ultrasounds. Because 80% of the time, women choose life when they see their baby in the womb. If you want to be a pro-life advocate, this is something that you can actually do. Please consider supporting preborn.org/wretched.
And? Are you okay?
Then send stuff. To idea@wretched.org.
This is from Michael. Todd, can you elaborate?
See, here's the, this is, Jimmy and I don't see each other. I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean that sentence. We don't, right now, I don't see Jimmy. So I don't know what he's doing in there. Were you napping?
I was not.
Did I just didn't give you your cue?
That's it.
Is that the deal?
That's
all righty then.
This is from Michael.
877-282-2337.
Todd, can you elaborate on leadership as a husband? How can I properly live my life without my wife feeling I'm forced to follow, and how should I respond to her wanting to lead and not follow?
It seems to me we men get tripped up when we think of the word leadership. I think we confine it to something pretty small, and that is making big decisions. Leadership is far bigger than that. In fact, it involves making big decisions as a leader, whether it's industry, business, school, home. It involves that, but there's far more to being a leader than just deciding how much we're going to spend on something this year. Being a leader is mostly spiritual. It's the one who's initiating the spiritual growth of the family. It's the one who is offering lovingly a direction for the family while insisting he gets input from his spouse, who is his best source of wisdom. And if you just said, oh, you don't know my wife, she's not very, but I'm telling you, she's your best source of wisdom. She's not the issue, you are. She's got something to say. You would do well to listen to her because she knows the inside game better than anybody else you're going to talk to. So a man, in leading his family, he's doing the things that advance the family spiritually. advance the family physically, meaning their care and their needs and their health and their shelter and provision. He's the one out front on those things. Now, as far as making the decisions go, I think that this is true. If Mrs. Friel were in the studio right now, because we just talked about this the other day, I asked her, in the last 34 years, have I ever slapped down on the leader card? And the answer was no, because you don't have to. For those rare times when a decision just has to be made, even with those rare times, probably could be stalled if there is an agreement between husband and wife. I just don't remember ever saying, that's it, I'm putting my foot down, I'm the spiritual leader of this home, and I'm telling you this is the way that it's going to be. That has never happened. Instead, it really is a partnership, and you lead by being in front on the other issues. Do you have the authority in those pinch situations to make the final verdict? Yeah, but most likely if you're leading in other ways, you're not going to need to. You got anything else for that, Jimmy?
Nope, I think you hit the nail on the head. If you're the spiritual leader of your home and you're pouring into your wife and praying with your wife and spending time, you're not going to need to make those type of decisions like that.
They're just very, very rare. And a good rule is if you don't have agreement, you don't make the decision. Because it's probably a big thing. If it were something puny, you should be at the point, even when you say I do, that you just don't care whether you're going to go to Zaxby's or Chick-fil-A, even though you should go to Zaxby's. The point is you just don't care anymore. It's like, whatever, big deal. You don't insist on your own way. Hey, that's a Bible verse. Love, just whatever you want, dear. That's what you want. That's what I want. As long as it's not sin, let's do what you want to do. And if both parties are doing that, you got yourself a foundation for a pretty good marriage. On those occasions when it's something big, it's about moving. Your honey doesn't want to move. You probably shouldn't go. I know you've got your arguments for it. If she's against it, it is so big. It is so profound. Why would you want to make a decision that would make your wife unhappy? The answer is you shouldn't. So you just stall it. You wait. Even if that might mean giving up something that you want or that you might even think is better for the family. Now, if a family, for instance, in the moving scenario is in dire need, and if I don't get this job, we can't eat, we're in debt, we don't have a house, and I've got to get a job. Yeah, you might say, honey, I am so sorry. I would love it if we could stay in this place. I have tried. I have looked for a job elsewhere. I have been working and working and working to find work, and I can't, and this is an opportunity in Paducah. Honey, we got to go. We're going to die. Okay. Then make that leadership decision. 877-282-2337.
All right. This is from Tim in Northern Ireland. Todd, my wife attends a church group intended for mothers and their babies. However, two homosexuals attend and bring their baby with them. They recently adopted another baby. I was wondering if it's better for the baby to be raised by these two men in a stable environment. Or be left in the foster care network where they might be passed around.
No, I look, the system, it's not great, but we can't do what God says we don't do. It's not better. You could say it's more stable. It is a wrong configuration. It's a sinful union that God doesn't even recognize, frankly. And it's not better for the child. I know the foster system, I get it, and the kids bouncing around, I see it, I know it, but we just simply cannot condone something that is sinful because we think, we perceive that it might be better for the kid. It can't be. It can't be. A child needs a man and a woman, and if that configuration is distorted, there's no way that the kid is going to be able to thrive rightly. Now, Jimmy, I am curious, however, this is a church group that's meeting?
Yeah, it is.
And there's two dudes who are adopting babies coming to the church group thing.
Right.
I think that I might want to look into what's going on there. If you're dealing with a church that permits that, might want to think about a different group of people to be meeting with. because zoinks, I don't know how they could overlook something like that. And as long as we brought up the subject of children in stable homes and not in the foster system, there is an article that I've been wanting to share for a bit. This is back to last November. What she learned about the orphanage was disturbing. This was in Christian Post. This church that was supporting orphanages overseas discovered, yikes, there's a lot of abuse going on. The money is not being used to help the children. Yay, this isn't the way that we want to steward God's good gifts to us to give away. So what did they do? They found family-strengthening organizations, their ministries that are more proactive than reactive, taking care of an orphanage that's reactive because the break has already happened, bad things were going on. And so instead, they support family-strengthening ministries to keep kids out of the orphanages. And that might even just be giving money to the family because they're, I don't know what the percentage is. A lot of the time that a kid ends up in an orphanage is because mom and dad can't afford to keep the child alive. So maybe just food for thought, rather than supporting international orphanages, what about supporting the ministries that keep kids from going into the orphanages? Because kids do best when there is a mom and a dad. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know how everybody's always trying to sell you something? This is different. We're actually giving away more content than most ministries charge for. The Fortis Plus app, daily videos, podcasts, director's cuts, news, completely free. All of this happens because of gospel partners just like you. Our gospel partners are the ones that get it. They see what we're doing, standing firm on biblical truth, strengthening churches, and helping people think biblically about everything going on in our upside down world. And that's why we want to ask you, if you're not already a gospel partner, we would love for you to join us. Maybe you've been listening for a while, and maybe you're thinking someone should help keep this going. Well, that someone could be you. Would you pray about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner? Just head over to FortisInstitute.org right now. That's FortisInstitute.org and get all of the answers to all of the questions you likely have about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California, beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
The lost generation wandered without direction after World War I. Well, today, there's another war raging. It's a cultural battle, and it's leaving young men disoriented and directionless. Raised on unfiltered entertainment and endless online content, Gen Z is facing unprecedented challenges with loneliness and depression. But there is hope. That's Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson.
Young man, you need to be learning the Bible. Yes, you got to learn your trade, and yes, you need to be learning what you're learning in school. But ultimately, we want to be transformed by the renewal of our mind.
As Jeremiah 6:16 says, stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is and walk in it. That's Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson. And it's available right now at Fortis Plus and all of your favorite podcast platforms. And you can also visit FortisInstitute.org to learn more about Dr. Adam Tyson, Way of Manhood, and all of our other content.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called our sanctuary. Through Christ, We find refuge from God's justice and find a safe haven where we can enter into the presence of the Holy God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not gonna do it. Wouldn't be prudent, but I might have a suggestion for you. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, you asked me a question about a question.
I did.
Why?
Because I wasn't sure if it would be fruitful to ask an answer.
What's the question?
About divorce and remarriage.
Yep. Got a long-standing rule. That would be a big negatory, Big Ben. The reason is not because I'm not interested in the subject, not that I wouldn't mind taking a deep dive exploration into Matthew 19, but I've learned that if you cannot, to answer a question about marriage, divorce, remarriage without details, it's unwise of me. It's just unwise. They're just too complex, all of these situations. And without knowing details, I would not serve you well. Furthermore, there might be people eavesdropping who might apply something quite deficient to their situation. I might mar them, ding them, scald them inadvertently, but nevertheless. Or they might apply something without knowing the entire treatment on the subject. So all that to say, no. But if you're interested, did preach through Matthew 19. You can find the recordings at alpharettabiblechurch.org, alpharettabiblechurch.org. It was just like 3-4 weeks ago. I think it was a very clever title. If you go to our sermons, it was, let me see if I can remember. There's a marriage and divorce. That's what I came up with, marriage and divorce. You can find that at alpharettabiblechurch.org. When you're done listening, send stuff to idea@wretched.org.
All right, this question is from Jim. Todd, according to Scripture, who is authorized to select elders for a local church? I left a church that picked elders by popular vote of members and saw consequences.
Yeah, you probably would. I think that Timothy was to appoint elders. Now, just keeping so many different dynamics aside, whether or not a church has a pastor in place who can do that, it seems that there needs to be somebody in the body with some maturity who is an elder to appoint elders. I know there are complexities to that. And as far as like having the church vote on elders, that really depends on your congregational model. It's interesting because you've got elder rule would say, no, the congregation doesn't vote on these things. Elder led might involve the congregation because it rises to the level of something so important. An elder is somebody who is a shepherd. Now, they might not be a pastor like we think about, oh, the guy in the pulpit on Sunday morning. But they nevertheless, it is an office and they are to be overseers of your soul. That means they can affect you. And personally, I would say as an elder-led church, that would be one of those decisions I think the congregation should be involved in. And there's wisdom in that. There's the congregational model that would say, absolutely, the congregation votes on that. And they've got the authority to vote in and the authority to vote out. On an elder-led model, the elders might hear a contrary opinion from the congregation and would have the right to overrule that. Not sure why you'd want to, but they would have the authority. And of course, the elder rule, they simply, that opportunity would not be afforded to the congregation. So it really depends on your church model. And once you've got that sorted, whether or not you involve the congregation, it'll be driven by what your ecclesiology is. It's turned out to be one of my favorite subjects, interestingly enough. I just love reading about how different churches do stuff. And I'm somebody who just loves everything buttoned down, neat, tidy, simple, straightforward, black, white, the end. And I see with churches, it's just not tidy. And the brilliance of the Bible, again, in my estimation, is that it affords us the ability to have a church government that looks different than our next door neighbors or maybe even a sister church 100 miles away. And believe, even the reformers agreed to that there is flexibility in church government and seeing how different people do it and is just fascinating to me because we might just learn something. It might be like, hey, you know what? That would be really a good thing to do. I was reading, this was quite a bit ago, was reading Tim Challey's, he's our Fortas fellow who deals with church issues. He was writing about going on vacation and visiting a church for, you know, go to church on, if you're on vacation, that doesn't mean you just remove yourself from Lord's Day. You go meet with God's people wherever you happen to be. And his encouragement was, maybe don't find a church that looks exactly like yours, because you might learn something. And you might see something and go, I'm so glad we do it this way. You might see and go, we really need to start thinking about doing it that way. We can learn from each other, and there shouldn't be division over this issue amongst the brethren. Church polity, ecclesiology, fascinating to me. Is it worth dividing over? Not a chance, as important as it is. 877-2. What?
What?
You just got that sound.
I was just going to correct you.
Fire away.
No, you don't even remember saying it, but you mentioned appointing elders from Timothy, and it was actually Titus.
Oh.
Just going to correct you.
Wait. Hold on a second here, mister. What?
Yeah, you said in 1 Timothy that it talks about appointing elders.
No, I believe Paul told Timothy to appoint elders.
Paul told Titus to appoint elders.
Are you sure he didn't tell Timothy too?
Maybe he did. Maybe we're both right.
Well, that's just like singing in harmony, isn't it? Hey, what's the Bible verse we're supposed to be? 2 Timothy 2:2?
That's right. 2 Timothy 2:2.
And what is that verse about, by the way?
It's about discipleship.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, read that verse for us. You don't have that verse. You haven't memorized it yet, have you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, let's hear it.
So Paul tells Timothy to...
appoint godly men as elders.
Not appoint godly men as elders, but teach these things that I have taught you in the presence of many witnesses. Teach these to others who can teach others also.
Mm-hmm.
Teach these to faithful men who can teach others also.
There you have it right there. All right, so you're going to present whatever it is that you have in the canon. While I'm talking, you'll do what you normally do, and that is go into the internet and watch your social media and wait for me to finish blathering and see if Paul told both Titus and Timothy to appoint elders.
I will.
All righty then.
All right. This is from Corey. Todd, as you know, both Islam and Mormonism share stories about their founders coming into contact with angels that revealed things to them. I'm curious, are you more inclined to believe Muhammad and Joseph Smith actually spoke to demons posing as messengers of God? Or should we be right? Should doubt be rightfully cast on that part of their account as well?
Jimmy, you're not going to have time to Google Titus and Timothy, because I believe that is exactly with whom they were communing and receiving information. The devil. By the way, if you read how Muhammad describes his encounter and how Joseph Smith describes his encounter, there's some similarities going on there. Where else would they come up with ideas that were so aberrant? Certainly not from an actual angel, but an angel posing as an angel of darkness posing as an angel of light. Because those religions, they're dark. They're very, very dark. And I know Mormonism is making a yeoman's effort to try to become mainstream. They are absolutely not. It is a work-based system. It is a secretive society. The oaths, the control of families. In that sense, it's very controlling about making sure that if you leave, look out, your life is going to be wrecked. And so I'm rather committed to the belief that they were not talking certainly to a representative of God. It was demonic. You got it? Was it Titus and Timothy?
I'm not seeing it in Timothy just yet.
That was a very polite way of saying you got it wrong, Friel. Alrighty, 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Matthew. Todd, I know that viewing pornography is wrong and sinful, but I go right back to it. Mm. If I'm living in habitual, unrepentant sexual sin, then it's clear that salvation has not taken place and that I have every right to examine myself. I want to be saved and produce godly sorrow. Am I beyond salvation?
I would love to talk to you. I hate to speak directly to you with something as important as this. My questions for you would be, and how do you feel about your porn habit? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Are you repulsed by what it is that you keep falling into? Or are you diving into that sin? Are you loving it? Do you really want to be freed from it? Or do you really want to just be able to keep on doing it and somehow sanctifying it? I'd like to know your heart. That's what you should examine. And you probably need the help of an older godly man who can put a bucket in that deep well known as your heart and figure out what's going on in there. Because I wouldn't want to say you say that you want to be, you know, be free of it. You say that you want to make sure that you're a Christian. Those are good signs. But if you're somebody who is habitually looking at something that sinful, I got to tell you, you do well to examine yourself to see if you're in the truth. The book that I've written on the subject, we might get it out this year. I don't know if we will or not. It's all about examining your heart to see if you are a true or false convert. It is worthy of that sort of introspection, but you probably need help doing it. If you're diving into sin, swimming in it, loving it, that's pretty safe. You're of the devil. If you're fighting against it, warring it, loathing it, seeing some increased victory, those would be very good signs. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.